Welcome, everybody. My name is Daniel Four. I think you got that. The website, if you want more info on where I'm coming from, is ancestralmedicine.org. And the talk tonight is on grief and the sacredness of grief and the ritual implications of grieving and what it is to be a whole human being through welcoming depth of feeling. And so my hope is to talk for maybe a half an hour and then to invite questions and dialogue from there. So if you have questions as we're going, if you could just kind of make a note, or if you need to, you can put something in the chat and that's okay as well. And then we'll circle into more dialogue space before too long. So I want to talk through four basic questions, and some of them might seem obvious, but that's how I'm going to approach it. First is, what do we actually grieve about? Then how do we do it? Then why does it matter? And then why does ritual and ceremony add something to that that might not otherwise be obvious? I'm speaking also as a doctor of psychology and a licensed therapist, so I appreciate deeply the mental health and good psychological perspectives on grief. And so respect to that. And also there are elements that ritual, ceremony, things like that bring to the table and bring to this topic that are not obvious just from a psychological perspective. So first, of course, we grieve about losses. The people we love, the human and otherwise people we love, the dog and cat people, the trees and plants and places that we love that are lost to us through destruction of habitat. And of, you know, of course, the most primary, overwhelming, pressing way that we grieve is when people we really love and care about die and we miss them, obviously. And we also grieve when we empathically feel the suffering of others and when there is harm not only to other living beings, but to institutions, to traditions, to bodies of knowledge, to things that are sacred in perhaps less relational ways that are desecrated and lost. An example would be my own ancestral traditions as a English, Irish, German arrival and colonizer, immigrant to North America. My own indigenous traditions have largely been lost. And so that has been a source of grief. We grieve also about experiences that are incomplete when we want something to be different than it is, when we want to have a kind, loving childhood and our childhood sucks and is painful and traumatic. We grieve when we have hopes about how life is going to be and we're disappointed. And when we know and feel that we're not realizing our potential here, that's a source of pain and grief. And we grieve also from a sense of longing for intimacy and connection with others. When it's not happening, it can totally be painful. And that longing for connectivity and intimacy is structurally just part of the challenge of being here on Earth. A lot of traditions talk about the journey to Earth as a kind of, not exile exactly, but in Ifa tradition, Yoruba tradition, we talk about it sometimes as a trip to the marketplace. And the sense is that home is in spirit and Earth is a the kind of training ground, a place to buy and sell things, if you will, and to acquire new experience and wisdom. But there's a soul level sense of being a bit, say disconnected, but having to work at the felt sense of connectivity here. It doesn't come easily and automatically when there's so much survival energy. So there's sadness just at being here that can arise. Of course, it's precious also, but my point with this first question of what do we grieve about is it's not just losses, and it's not just tragedy and difficulty that comes to our life. There's a structural exile a bit that is, and longing that's a part of being here. And being in a kind of separateness that the body suggests just based on our nervous system and sensory awareness, right? And it's important to take that to heart. Otherwise, we can think that grief is just personal, because we can grieve for collective pain, or that it is only something that we're going to allow to be present when we've had an obvious loss in our life. And it's like, well, why are you sad? I don't need a fucking reason to be sad. That's the reality of it. There's we could cite all the injustices happening, or the mass extinction crisis, or whatever, if you need to reach for a reason. But sometimes it's just part of our condition here, and that's okay. So normalizing that, and there can be a lot of reasons, so to speak, or triggers or catalysts for grief to arise. Good. So how do we grieve? Well, let me suggest a few ways, and my intent with each of these is to expand a little bit how we hold this topic. A lot of people would tend to limit grief to sadness and crying, which is was super limited, right, in the understanding of what it is to grieve. So we grieve through the body, for one, and that can look like a body process like tears, which of course can happen for all kinds of reasons, but it can look like expressing things on in our movement and our actual body in that way. It can look like energetic states and symptoms that happen on a physical level. And often that is when grief is stuck, but not only. Even when we're in overwhelming grief, it's very much a body process. It's a biochemical, neurological, nervous system reality when we're hit with big grief. And so we move. Think of grief, for the purposes of the way we're talking about it, as a process of seeking to integrate or digest or make sense of, not just intellectually, but to digest experience and change and loss. And so that can happen through a body level. It can happen through thinking and feeling, of course, and through strong emotion. But it can also, we can also intentionally grieve, or not even intentionally, it can just happen through speech and just talking to one another, and things like good therapy, or just talking to friends, family, loved ones, and expressive arts, moving energy through any number of different kinds of expression in that way. And also through ritual actions, or just actions, let's say. For example, wearing all black, or cutting your hair, or doing completion ceremonies, honoring ceremonies, bringing something to someone's grave. And so they're fasting, retreat, doing any number of different kinds of ritual. And of course, there are other ways as well, making life changes, etc. But the point is that grief is not just a feeling. It's not just an emotional state. And it may or may not include crying at any point. We express sadness or grief, or that we move through the process of trying to make sense of and digest experience in so many different ways. And for a lot of people, a lot of the time, it's not even a conscious process, but it's a process of just being hit by life experience. And it's important also, when we're being allies to folks who are going through loss or change, or just feeling life more deeply, that we understand that that can look so many different ways, right? Good. Let me, just referencing notes a little on the side that I made. And so some of this I want to just get across, and then we'll get into dialogue. So we talked a little bit about what we tend to grieve about and how it might look. Another is, maybe it's obvious if you're on the call, but why is it a problem to avoid grieving? So we might conceptually probably already be on the same page about it, but doesn't mean we're good at it. it's a there's a need because the dominant culture, the mainstream culture in the United States, if there is such a thing, doesn't tend to encourage emotional expressivity and grieving. And so there's a need to reclaim that, the space for that. And if we don't, what we risk is physical health trouble. When grief and strong emotional energy is stuck, there's a tendency to really suffer physically as a result. There can be illness or just a stagnancy and a stuckness in the body. Another is when we're blocking psychological experience from being completed or just life experience, we tend to compartmentalize. We tend to be in denial or shut off or wall off different aspects of our experience, and we suffer as a result. It's a way of working with our life force energy that's causes us to have a more contorted and neurotic and tangled up kind of life. And so psychologically, when we block strong feeling, it comes at a cost to our well-being. And when we block our heart off from a certain kind of pain in our life, the tendency is for other aspects of our life to suffer, other relationships, other aspects of our life. I don't think you can block your heart off and say, I'm not going to feel this, but I really want to stay open to all these other things. And so that numbing out or disconnecting from a thing comes at a cost psychologically and to our relationships. And when we, at the more extreme end, when we lose touch with our own pain, the tendency is often to start to inflict pain on others in order to try to get back in touch with something. It's hard to describe exactly, but often when people really lose touch with their own hearts is when they are at risk of becoming dangerous human beings who will hurt others in order to try to provoke or reconnect with the humanity inside themselves. It's not that it's conscious in that way, but it's dangerous to lose touch with pain and our vulnerability and our hurting. And the more we go down that road or do that, the more likely we are to reinforce habits of shaming and repression and just to recreate a culture that doesn't feel. And the implications are big. They're big for also our politics and how we see reality. The more compassionate and heart connected we are, the more likely we're going to support policies and relate with people in a way that affirms interconnectedness. So choosing to feel has all kinds of ramifications, right? And if we block it off, well, our humanity gets more constricted. So you probably get that, or you probably wouldn't be on the call. The last question I want to speak to is, what can ritual and ceremony bring to the topic of grieving that might not otherwise be obvious psychologically? And there's a couple things, and these things all come into play when we do grief ritual work or, yeah, things like that, or whether it's in session space or group space. One is that grieving alone is totally different from grieving in a space of connectedness with others. And it's one of the most important things about holding grief in like a sacred or a reverential way that I encourage people to really take to heart. And those others don't necessarily have to be living humans, because you can't always be like, all right, I'm sad, I need four awesome people to come over right now and kindly hold the space for me to cry my face off. And this is not always logistically possible. And so calling in your connection to the spirits, to the sacred, to the earth, to whatever helpful powers you connect with can also function to create a kind of holding or container for grieving. And traditionally, or even in modern times, when people choose to grieve in community, it's really potent because the container that's provided helps to ensure that the grieving isn't accompanied by the sense of being alone. When you're super sad and in it, and you also feel alone and disconnected, that totally sucks. And it causes the pain in a way to be less ritually useful, less, not that it's about it being useful, but there's a sense that I'm not convinced that grieving while also feeling alone is entirely helpful. It can really reinforce a sense of disconnection and just suffering in a not necessarily healing or connective way. It's my sense that grieving and moving through pain and sorrow and loss and longing, while also having some sense of connectivity to others or to the earth or to the greater, can be very potent and human, like compassion-inducing, heart-increasing, beneficial practice to embrace. And not that it's always a choice, because sometimes loss comes really intensely to our lives. Sometimes we don't have a choice about the pain that's delivered to us by the universe. But insofar as we have a little bit of wiggle room to regulate, seeking to have that sense of some other energies or beings or people holding a container for us can make a huge, huge difference. And so ritual brings that sense of container and holding to what's happening, ideally. So that's one thing. Another is that a lot the traditions I've been around when someone's in a grieving process tend to see the energetic reality or the subtle energy of grief as a kind of, I guess you'd say, heaviness, or and totally not in any kind of like shaming or negative or oppressive way, but as a kind of energy that can be shed and cleansed and cleared. And again, it's not about, let me just sage these uncomfortable emotions away from your life. It's more that as the energy is moved and metabolized, there's a benefit to often through water, sometimes smoke, sometimes, you know, through leaves and fragrance. Like there can be a washing off or a cleansing off of what is ready to go, like a shedding of old pain. And using basic ritual technologies like I mentioned, water, smoke, oils, prayer, chanting, in order to support that shedding can be really helpful. Sometimes without any knowledge of that, it's my sense that if folks are in an intense grieving space and they're not doing any basic energetic hygiene from time to time, there can be a sense of just stewing in a heavy energy that can have a quality of stagnancy, or like it can become a bit less beneficial if there's not a understanding of the need to shake it off a little bit. So that's another element that ritual and ceremony brings to grieving. Another is that as we get more current with our life experience to date, as we move through the ways that our childhood sucked or our marriage sucks or whatever the things that have been truly formative in our losses and pain are, and it allows us to become more present and available for participating in the feeling and transmuting of collective kinds of pain. And that's often collective pain that we're, you could say, karmically or often ancestrally or culturally connected to. Like there's collective pain between the people in Sri Lanka and Tamil Nadu, but I'm not connected to that psychologically or culturally. The pain of participating ancestrally in the genocide and colonization of North America through Native people and African ancestor people, that's something I'm more ancestrally connected to, so more likely to get hit by. Or the pain or the discrimination toward people who are not heterosexual. And so we have different, based often on our life experience, but not only, we have different soul level affinities to different bigger cultural collective fault lines. And as we become more current with our life, we can be available, if our hearts are open and we're willing, to participating in grieving those wounds and fault lines in the collective into more health. because there's a backlog of grief. There's a lot of unfelt pain. And one of the ways we stay current and like healthy as a species is to feel the fullness of what's happening. And so we're creating as a species so much suffering on the earth with each other and with the other than humans that there's plenty of grief to go around. And so ritual technologies tend to recognize that we're wired into all these other relationships and to have skills that can be used by ritual facilitators to regulate intensity on that. So if people are totally underwater for too long in the grieving, typically there are ways to bring people back from what's essentially a state of possession or being flooded. And if people are just on the verge of being cracked open and they could use a good cracking open, the ritual facilitators usually know how to give them a little bit of a kick or a little nudge to encourage that cracking open. And so just being in a communal vessel for ritual, or even if you're on your own, but you've called in the spirits and ancestors to help you, those additional powers can help you to safely participate in grieving things that are not only personal, but also collective. In that sense, give me a sec here. Let me say just that and talk through a few key points and basic ritual skills, and then we'll be in dialogue with the second half hour or the last 20 minutes or so. So one key point here when we're talking about grief is, as I see it, emotions, I guess you could say grief is, it's more than just an emotion, but sadness, pain, loss, longing, heartache are the sense is that there's programming on the grief channel 24/7. You're not going to bottom out if your heart's cracked open and you're in a space of openness to collective pain. There's so much, there's plenty of pain to completely destroy your nervous system and your life, period. And so there's a need to know how to come back up for air. If you're going to be sustainable in your choice, it's not a choice for everybody, but if you choose to participate in feeling collective pain, it's important to know that you're not going to drain the well with that. There's so much unmetabolized suffering in this observable world and in the realm of spirit that it's important skill to know how to go into that and then come back from it without drowning. So ritual spiritual traditions recognize it is possible to drown, basically, or to go so far as to have difficulty coming back, or to have fragmentation of your energy body, or to have your nervous system become so tanked by the intensity level that you don't have a way to, you're not able to personally come back easily. And so that's a skill when we get into grief work, to know how to respect limits and bring yourself back, or to be around people that will bring you back if you're going there. You could think of it as an optimal zone where your nervous system is able to handle a thing, that you can be in just sobbing and heartache and pain for, you know, maybe even 20 minutes and still just be exhausted that day and be like, oh man. Or maybe it's an hour. Maybe for you, you can spend 2 hours there, but you probably don't want to spend a week there, not alone. And so there are limits to how much our energy body and nervous system can handle. And so last few thoughts, and then we'll be in dialogue. Think of community, whether they're human or other than human, like spirit or physically observable, as a kind of extended nervous system. They can, when you are grieving and also connected to others. Those others can allow you to go deeper into the experience safely, and they can help to pull you back when needed. In some traditional funerals, there might, it's almost like there's an organic designation of first level grievers, second level grievers, then less, more peripheral people. And so for the people that are most impacted, you don't need to crack them open. They're probably, the job with them is to help them to not go underwater. And so other people's job is to like, or not go, not stay too long underwater, like to help them to make sure that they eat occasionally or regulate intensity with them, that they don't die also, and that they don't get pulled to the other world with the one who's died. And the second level grievers, if that's happening, like you just need to take care of yourself and like the people that are a little more peripheral. So maybe you're not cracked open. If you need to help things to get cracked open, then you let it, then you let the grief come through. And so there's a process, if you watch communally a funeral that's not super emotionally constipated, like a lot of funerals in the United States are, that it's so bad. I've been to big crowded funerals where nobody's crying. It's really neurotic. And but the community itself functions as like a collective organism with the nervous system, and the pain is spread out. So other people share in holding it. That's super healthy and good. It's a good way to work. And what else? The last thing I'll say, because then I want to get to dialogue, is kind of more alive and interesting to me. We have a tendency, it's a problematic tendency, to assume that anything we're thinking or feeling is personal. It's like it's our thoughts and our feelings. And it's a dangerous assumption a bit, because for one, we're a complex convergence of different forces and spirits and energies. I don't even have the view that there's one soul. It's like we're a convergence of different souls. And so we could be streaming or receiving information and experience from anywhere. And if we identify too strongly with the contents of our consciousness, we can, the risk with grief is that, for one, we might be flooded and not have a good explanation for why we're just super sad that day and why we're flooded. Well, it could be that you're on some level choosing to participate in the feeling and metabolizing of some pain that you're connected to. Could be something ancestral, could be some collective thing that's happening in the world. And so if you're being recruited essentially for that, or you're willing to participate in that, then it's not, you'll process it in a strange way if you think it's just personal. The people also will tend to be like feel shame or a lack of understanding or confusion about why they're in so much pain, and because it doesn't make sense that they would personally be feeling that. And what I'm saying is that we organically, without even consciously choosing it, are connected to bigger currents of energy and experience. And it's going to just come through, especially if our heart's at least a little bit open. And it's good to allow that to move through. And it requires the flexibility about our sense of what like that you don't always need to have an explanation. You don't always need to have a story about why things are happening. So yeah, let me say that and open it up a bit to dialogue here. I know it's a lot. Some of it's very general, but I hope the point around grieving in connection and in relationship rather than alone lands. And I hope that the point around not everything's personal, that we really participate in grieving bigger pain and bigger trouble lands. And people have lots of different angles and kinds of experience on this. So I'd love to hear if you have questions. You could, if you've come in through internet, you can type your name and then I can take you off mute. But if you called in, how would I take you off mute? That's the challenge I run into. What I'm going to do is see if I can unmute folks just for a second to see. Come on. Otherwise, I won't be able to get folks who are on the call. Feel free to type a question if you have a question, and you can type. But I don't have a... You might be able to unmute yourself on the phone if you called in. Man, why is it not showing up? Sorry, everybody. Does anybody have a question or something you want to speak to?
Daniel, am I unmuted? This is Sharon.
Yeah, great, Sharon. Go for it.
Hi. Thanks.
Yeah,
this is super interesting for me. One of the experiences that came up for me, there are like three different ones, but one in particular is when I was in France with a group of women, and we were in a cemetery, and I was really being held by the community of women I was with, and somehow I tapped into this deep, deep keening, grieving that was so profound and beyond anything that was mine individually, because I'd never been to that place before. And also connecting with Australia, because I was with Australian women. And there was this triad of sense of place between North America, Europe, and Australia, and somehow going deep into time and space that I had never experienced to that extent. And so what you're saying about moving beyond individual experience and moving beyond trying to understand why or how really strikes a chord for me. And the importance of having a strong container, because these women really did hold me in the welling up of emotion and sound, like the keening that came through me was otherworldly in many ways.
It's good. And you feel you were able to go into that because there was a container of support present and move through it. Yeah. Definitely. It's great. One of the practices that we'll get into in the grief ritual here in Asheville, and I mean, you can't force it, but you can create a space for it. And I don't know what to call it exactly, but it's something like just begging the earth for forgiveness for how we are. And if you haven't tried it and you're on the call, highly recommend it as a practice. Like, find a place, if you can go outside and it's not too cold, whatever it is, and just, you know, collect yourself ritually a bit, maybe make some offerings. Like, you can't force it, but find your way into speaking directly to the spirit of the earth for how we are. Like, it's possible to intentionally choose to speak on behalf of humans. That's our form. It's okay to own that and to say things like, we are completely fucking it up. Like, wow, the amount of damage and harm that we are causing is so it's unkind, it's so many things. But and it's not in this moment, I'm not doing it justice because I'm guiding a call, I'm not going to go all into it, but you find your way in a heart level into that pain and allow the earth to receive it, to hold it. The ocean is another great place. Going to places in the natural world where the natural energy is able to hold what you can bring is fantastic. And it's very, it's good for us on a soul level to recognize the harm we cause. Not in a guilty way, but in a, like, just a real way. Yeah. So, and you don't, like you said, Sharon, you don't have to know exactly the story behind it. So, yeah.
Can I speak to just what you brought up? I don't want to monopolize things here.
Okay, go ahead.
My experience of bringing that to the earth, probably about 10 years ago, I was in Salt Lake City, up in the mountains there, doing some work organized, not by Joanna Macy, but on her work. And I was cracked wide open and didn't feel that I was sufficiently held by the community.
Yeah.
And it took me weeks of being really careful and gentle with myself and working with my husband and the other person who was with me to bring me back to a sense of not drowning.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's a real ritual hazard not to be taken lightly. Mm-hmm. And when emotion is not all organized, you know, so when we feel one kind of pain or grief, we could be grieving any other thing in that moment too. And people can, sometimes the heart will crack open and be like, damn, like, why am I so sad about this story in the news or what, you know, this thing that seems like medium sized and now I'm crying all day about it. Mm-hmm. And it's partly because once that pathway or channel of emotional energy or grief is open, all kinds of things can move through. Mm-hmm. And it's good to get comfortable with that. It's beneficial, like Allison speaking to about touching in with the non-personal grief, both for the humans and the other than humans. Mm-hmm. It's important to hear and know, if you haven't heard it, that that is good, not just for us, that that's a way that our species as a collective force on this planet, which is so impactful, participates in feeling what we're doing so we can make better choices. If we can't feel the impact of what's going on, it's going to be real tough to make more altruistic and relational choices. And unfortunately, people who are heart open tend to kind of have to grieve double time for all the people whose hearts are walled off. And so if you get that sense, it's like, yeah, yeah. And, you know, there are times to intentionally not do that and dish it back in like one-on-one situations. But in general, we have such a backlog that if you're willing to feel and you can stay well in it, it's a sacred job. It's a ritual specialization to be good at grieving. And that's recognized as a specific kind of gift that some people have more than others. You can cultivate it, but it's a certain kind of gift that people have. So, yeah, good. Thanks, Sharon. Okay. I'm gonna unmute people for just a sec. So, you know, 3, 2, 1, unmute. So the people on the phone can speak in. Is there anybody else who wants to speak up? Just say your name and I'll mute everybody but you.
And
like yeah, to... okay. 1 sec, Dan. Let me mute people and take you off. Oops. Whoa. Take you off mute. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So I was curious about kind of levels of grief, if that's a thing.
Go ahead. Say a little more if you can.
Yeah, so there's, you know, the personal grief of somebody who I love has passed away, and that leaves a very real void in one's life. And then there's stories of people that, you know, aren't connected to my own ancestral lineage, or, you know, if you turn on the news, there's basically 100 reasons every few minutes to grieve. And yeah. I was just wondering if you have any sorts of, or if there are, like, how to keep the floodgates open, how to keep the stream of grief flowing in a way that doesn't become overwhelming and is also appropriate to.
Yeah, I understand. There are different challenges. The people who are already kind of open tend to struggle with how do I get anything done when the world's on fire? I just could cry all day and, oh my God, I can't read the news and so much suffering. And if I just post again on a Facebook about it. I'm going to work it through or whatever. So some people are so cracked open that it's hard to function. When you get like that, if you can, I think, if you're stuck there and you know it, one of the grounding things is if you want to respond to the suffering in the world and not just swirl in it, then there's a need to be skillful and a need to engage in effective service. And grieving only without any rootedness in outer service can become a stuck kind of position if you're there only all the time. Now, that comes in waves. If you just had a child die or a parent die or something, you know, something that just rocked your life, that's different. That's different. That's an initiatory shattering of your world. And you don't get to decide exactly how that goes. Besides, call in as much support as you can. You're going to need it. But if the question is, how do I get my heart cracked open even more? Well, there's not one answer for that either, but I would say look at what you do in your life that tends to distract or numb out. Like, if you have a drinking habit, well, how's that working? If you have a Netflix binge-watching habit, how's that working? Like, I'm not saying that's bad. I watch Netflix too, but notice where you numb out. And notice how you can say yes to what's difficult even more. And if whatever we tend to avoid is going to be the place to reclaim our heart. So if there's pain that you have, you're like, oh, I really want to grieve for the world and all the things happening right now. And you just have all this unresolved shit in your heart about your relationship with your dad. We'll go there. Because if you look at that and it makes you want to kind of throw up and just be mad and cry and be confused, then that is going to free up a lot of really alive energy that will help you to feel more deeply what's happening in the world. But empathy or open-heartedness or connectivity on a heart level is something that you can absolutely intentionally cultivate. The other thing I'd say is speak directly. Give yourself permission to talk out loud when you're alone. Talk to the powers. Talk to the earth. Talk to the earth. And instead of just feeling in this background way that never gets named out loud, speak directly to the earth. And let it rip for a while. Like, if you feel as a white person guilt about the way white people or your specific ancestors have related with, let's say, African ancestor people in the last 500 years or so, but it never really gets to the level of fully feeling that, give yourself permission to speak out loud to those ancestors or to your own. To both. And that once the speech and heart get lined up, that's a sweet space to be in, where you can be talking to the spirits, praying, and also crying and snotting and just like feeling things deeply. That's a potent space to be in. There's a lot of sweetness, a lot of good medicine that can come from that. So yeah, talk to yourself when you're alone. Talk to the powers and give yourself space to do that. That's what comes to mind in this moment. That's a good question, Dan. Thanks. Yeah. Others, I don't see anybody typing in, so I'm going to unmute people again to see if anybody else has got something that, anything at all that you're sitting with. Yeah. So people are unmuted. Yeah, go ahead, Ian. I'm going to mute people again and then unmute you. So yeah, go ahead.
Can everyone hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay. I have seven living children, and my family is in a state of grief right now. And one thing that we're trying to do is honor that our children have feelings too, and to make space for them to handle their pain. And it's been hard to reach out to the local community here for help. Sometimes we don't always have enough time at home to honor everyone. Would like setting aside time for them just at home to process be good?
One of the things that comes to mind that we do in grief rituals, and I'll do in, in some other settings like fire rituals sometimes, is you could do this with them and then teach them the basics of how to do it. It could be that there's a bowl of water or a candle if they're old enough to do candles responsibly, and a bowl of water like with flower petals or with incense or something, that, you know, whatever it is, and sugar, and you could teach them how to just make a bowl of water, and then if they're sad about something, hold a little offering and speak what it is that they're sad about, or speak to who they miss, or speak the thing that they feel is troubling their heart aloud, and allow the emotion to move and to go, and then offer it to the water, or if you have like a fire going and you're going to do a fire as a family, you offer it to the fire, or just offer it out to the earth. But it could be a bowl of dirt too, but let's do it with a bowl of water, and they offer it to the bowl of water, and when they're good, they just take it out and say thank you to the earth and pour it out. So that kind of basic skill, where there's what you're doing is you're recruiting the support and the involvement of the elemental powers and the spirits in that. And you're saying, thanks to the waters for holding this, you know, helping me with this. And sadness, I'm generalizing, but it becomes a problem, so to speak, when it's stuck, when it's moving. And so the main thing around, especially people who feel things really strongly, is you totally have to avoid stagnation. And so the thing is move the energy somehow. And so a basic practice like that is helpful. And teaching them that it's okay to talk to the spirits, it's okay to talk out loud. Speaking, for one, it moves the body on the jaw, and it gets the kind of the body more involved in the process, so it's less just in the mind, and it moves energy. There's a magical potency to speaking, and so helping them know, provided they're not weirding out other kids at school or whatever, that it's okay to speak out loud what they're feeling, and they can do basic practices of making an offering and then taking it out to the earth. And you could do that together as a family in a way that you just shared things that, you know, you were sad about or whatever. And then the fire or the water or whatever is really the one holding the family. And so you're modeling you and your partner being held by the elemental powers. And then you're also holding the children, but really it's the powers who are the earth and the waters who are holding all of you. So it's good for kids to see the grown-ups be held by the powers. Yeah? Does that land? Yeah?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. That's what comes to mind this moment. Thanks, Ian. Yeah. But just the normalizing it, just that you're working it like that is great. So thanks.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. I'm going to read this question from Michael. I think it's Michael here in Asheville. Yeah, okay, from Eliza. Yeah, great, yes. What do you think about a public grief ceremony? I have a friend who brought this up as a politically oriented action to move what people are feeling around military, government, et cetera. Are there different safety nets, containers, as well as ways to break open? Wanting folks to move heavy energy, but also encouraging collective cultural witnessing. I hear the question. Let me just speak to it. It's a good question. And yes, I think public grief ritual kind of work can be great. I mean, I'm leading a grief ritual in Asheville in a month. And however, I feel really intensely and strongly and fiercely that it can't be as a political action. It needs to be a ritual. And if you bring political agenda into it, it's going to create a much less safe vessel for people to feel things deeply. There needs to be the people holding it need to have the training in some form or another. I'm not, I don't mean in a judgy, controlling way, but some kind of training to know how to hold space for others and how to really follow the lead of the heart without having any political agenda. Like, you can say we want to come together and grieve colonialism, patriarchy, sexism, and all the racist toxicity that fucks up our world. But once you get there and you call the spirits, it's a ritual. And you follow the lead of the heart and of the spirits in that space. Period. That's it. So I have intense feeling around it, because sometimes people generally, I'm not pointing any of this at you, Eliza or Michael, but sometimes people who are very involved in activism and social justice work will come at ritual from a political agenda and muck it up. It's not activism in a ritual space. It's the energies are actually in some ways contrary to each other, in a way. I mean, I think that they can deeply be harmonized, but in ritual space, the spirits and the heart well-being and the ritual integrity of the vessel needs to take precedence over any specific political agenda in that space. That's my feeling about that. It's a thing about ritual safety, but it's a great question, Eliza. I'm glad you brought it up, and hope you're doing well there. And I hope you don't hear what I was saying as a discouragement to doing public grief work, just that it would need to be ceremony and not in that moment activism per se. It's its own kind of service that supports the cause, but it needs to be spirit guided. That's my bias on it.
Hey Daniel, I wanted to respond quickly if I could.
Go ahead.
I definitely agree with you that to not co-opt a ritual space with any kind of political agenda. And so I suppose politically oriented is not quite the word, but it is definitely like some sort of action oriented or an activist energetic that would back a sort of like public grief ceremony that my friend, whom you met recently, Melissa, has been talking about, like in a place like Pritchard Park, which you're familiar with in Asheville, maybe.
I'm happy more offline to talk with anyone directly, Melissa or whoever, about it. The main thing is that the person guiding it ritually can meet someone if they show up and they're like, I'm here because my son died last week and my world is shattered. And right, that's what I'm bringing, and know how to hold that energy in that space. Because if you say public grief ritual and you come in one way and then suddenly it's like the spirits of that land are who are speaking, the person who's holding it needs to be anchored and know ritually how to regulate the intensity for any given person so that there's energetic safety. Like Sharon was saying, it's possible that someone could show up and be ready to be really cracked open and be really cracked open. And so that'll test whoever's leading it and their ability to see it through with that person.
Right.
That's all. Yeah. So, but I don't know, how do you determine that? There's not one straightforward thing, but there's a need for it. So respect on what you're bringing. Yeah. And we can dialogue it more as well. So,
okay, cool. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Let's do one more question. I'm going to unmute people a sec here. So everybody's unmuted. Anybody else got something that hasn't spoken? Anybody? 3, 2, 1. All right. So I'm mute people again. So we're at time, basically. I always feel a little awkward when I'm talking about grief in particular, because I'm not in this super heart dropped in space right this moment exactly. But that's not the intent of this talk. is to do grief work per se, but to have a little bit more framework for how to navigate our way out of the unhelpful aspects of the cultural conditioning and to bring in some of the more ritual elements to our everyday life. So I don't need to recap in this moment. Y'all were on a call. If I can be supportive to you, let me know. Feel free to reach out. And I personally have found a lot of benefit from the work of Martine Praktel and also Maladoma Somme and Sobhanfu Somme in their work with grief and teachings. I know there's a ton of other good people, but those are three people who have been helpful to me personally. And I will just underscore, if you take nothing else from the call, notice when you're grieving, when you're sad, when others are grieving and sad. I think the single most important distinction is grieving while simultaneously feeling alone compared to grieving while feeling in some way networked in, held, connected, etc., whether by a living person, the land, spirits, whatever. And so if you can, seek that connectivity even when you're going under or even when you're just like waist deep in the grief. And so it's something we can call on and something we can proactively cultivate in a way that helps the grief to be actually healing and connective. So thanks everybody for your engagement and for calling in. I appreciate it, and good to see some familiar faces. And yeah, that's it. If you want to reach out, ancestralmedicine.org is where I'm doing stuff. So, and we do have a grief ritual in Asheville that's happening on February 5th. So yeah, thanks everybody. Have a good evening, and more soon. Take care.